The Recipes for Life podcast is a conversation about my favorite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. If you would like to become a qualified health coach, then the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, or IIN for short, can help you achieve your goals. I completed their health coaching course many years ago, which has been one of the catalysts for my own journey into what I now love to do, which is to help people achieve greater health through the sharing of information through my books, seminars, podcasts, TV shows and films. I recommend IIN for anyone wishing to pursue a career in the health coaching and wellness space. IIN is a one-year course, so that if you're a full-time worker, busy parent, or wherever you are in your life, it is flexible enough so you'll be able to complete all the required curriculum. Please see the link included in the podcast show notes or my website to access the free sample class and first module of their program. This will give you a great taste of the format as well as the structure, and you can also utilize my special discount that I can offer you if you decide to sign up. Make sure you tell the admissions team that you're part of the Pete Evans Tuition Savings to claim your very substantial discount. Please visit integrativenutrition.com or email admissions@integrativenutrition.com. Morley Robbins, also known as the Magnesium Man, is the founder of the Magnesium Advocacy Group and the creator of the Root Cause Protocol. Morley views it as his life work to push back the tides of nutritional insanity and magnesium deficiency in the day-to-day lives of the inhabitants of planet Earth. Through MAG, he is committed to educating as many people as possible about the magnificence of magnesium and ending the epidemic of magnesium deficiency plaguing the health and well-being of people today. Join him in his Facebook community to gain greater insights and the importance of minerals in general and magnesium in particular. Facebook.com/groups/magnesium advocacy or go to gotmag.org. That's gotmag.org. Morley, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. It's definitely a delight to have you here. And some of our followers will be quite familiar with your work, but for those that are new, we'd like to talk about the Magnesium Man. Can you give us an overview of how you got into this work and why you're so focused on minerals, please?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the last place I expected to be when I was 65, I can tell you that. I grew up in a very sickly household. I had designs on being a doctor until I got to college and then realized I wasn't a very good student. But I did what any individual who wants to stay in the healthcare field did. I went into the world of hospitals, got into hospital management and then hospital consulting, and did that for 32 years. And for 20 years, I was traveling all over the United States. And at one point, my right shoulder said, "We're not doing this anymore." I got frozen shoulder. I couldn't pick my hand up above my waist. And it was from pulling a suitcase behind me for 20 years. And that forced me into interaction with my now wife, who's a chiropractor here in Louisiana. And we were up in Chicago at the time. But it was such a mind-bending experience to have this chiropractor make a few adjustments, and suddenly I had my mobility back. I was really struck by that. And started to do reading about natural healing, but in particular about minerals. And the book that I started with was Carolyn Dean's The Magnesium Miracle, and the rest is history. I've been reading now for 10 years. I read every morning, 7 days a week, for about 2.5-3 hours. And it's an absolute fascinating journey of discovery about how the human body really works, not how they want us to think it works. So it's been a fascinating process.
It's interesting. Part of that echoes my own story as well, where I was a young adult and I got stuck in a position, and luckily there was a chiropractor at the end of the road where I lived, and I'd never seen one before, actually understood what they did. And at the age of 17, I went down there out of sheer desperation because I was basically stuck in this position of my back. and they managed to fix me in one session or give me mobility back. And I was just blown away by it. And now I'm 45, so nearly 30 years later, I see a chiropractor generally every month for maintenance and management, and so does my family. And we reap the benefits. And obviously, that's a structural system. So I want to talk to you about the internal system. And thanks for the great comments about the magic pill. I know you've had the chance to watch it and share it with some of your colleagues and patients. So we didn't delve into the minerals in that film, obviously. We only had 90 minutes to show the power of food. But where do you think more knowledge and more education needs to be around?
Yeah, well, first, I love that movie. I thought it was amazing. And everyone I've talked to who's watched it has been really moved by it. So, you know,
thank you.
Kudos to you for making that available. I think it's a stellar piece of work. And I think that clearly you make the point that ancestral foods have a lot of nutrient density. And as you said, you only had so many minutes to make your point, and what you focused on, you did very well. And my absolute favorite part of the movie was Rangan Chatterjee's question, "What are you eating?" I love that. That rings in my head every time I'm talking to a client. I'm thinking, "What are you eating?" And they're always a little hesitant to tell me because I know that there's going to be some level of judgment on my part. But I think what people need to understand as it relates to adopting a more ancestral diet is that there are some important factors to consider. One is we are what we eats, and we have to be really thoughtful about what's the farmer feeding the plants and the animals that I'm eating. And a farmer who's really thoughtful and caring and devoted to their trade will talk your ear off about what they do to feed the plants and the animals. A farmer that's cutting corners will change the subject very quickly and start talking about the weather. And I've had that experience at farmers markets here in the States. I mean, I'll get right in someone's face and start asking them what they're doing. And you can very quickly size up what they're level of integrity and commitment is. So I think people need to realize that not all food is the same, that they're just in the same way that not every person is the same because of the inputs that we provide for ourselves.
Let's dig a bit deeper into that then. So for anybody that's new to any of this work and they're saying, well, what does that mean? We are what we eats. And you talked about how they feed the plants, obviously through the soil and the type of water that's being used, if it's not rainwater, and also the animals to do with what the food they're consuming, whether it's natural or as it's manipulated, I guess would be the nicest word we could use there. So talk to us about that and the comparisons between optimal and not so good.
Yeah. No, one of my graduates of my training program, he's a small grain farmer in California, and he loves to grow barley and radishes. And he's very proud of the fact that he, unlike most of his colleagues, he sprays the soil with copper sulfate so that the organisms in the soil get access to that mineral, because he knows how important it is to increase what's called the Brix content of the product. So that the Brix is what gives it the sugars and the sweetness and the fullness of its taste is the Brix content. And he, hands down, has the best product. He said, but the tragedy of the American farming system, I don't know whether this is true worldwide, but certainly here in America, there's no incremental payment for a better product. It's by pound. It's not by quality. And the same is true. My wife's brother raises beef cattle here in Louisiana. And he's very committed to grass farming and having animals that are eating real grass, you know, that's grown from real soil that he's very careful about feeding properly, much like Joel Salatin. And he said, but the frustration is he doesn't get any incremental payment for that grass-fed beef versus someone who's feeding it grain. and it could be GMO grain. And so that's the disconnect in the farming community worldwide, is we've totally lost connection with quality and the importance of these nutrients, the minerals and the vitamins especially, that are found in food and found in the soil or find their way into the plants and animals. But there's no recognition for that as it relates to the sale of it or the payment to the farmer for the efforts that they go to make that.
It's interesting. I one of my favorite meetings once upon a time a few years ago in Tasmania, actually, I was talking to a beef farmer there, or a cattle farmer, and they're renowned for having some of the best grass in the country.
Sure.
And I said, how do you define yourself? Do you define yourself as a cattle farmer for your job? He goes, no, we're actually grass farmers. Our whole goal is the quality of the grass, because that, from there, the cows don't need to do anything. They just do their work, you know, which is to live and to eat and to chew and to turn that into energy for them. He goes, so we're actually grass farmers. We're not cattle farmers. And it really struck me, because there was no ego about it or anything. It was just he understood that for future generations, they really have to look after that soil and look after that land.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I made a pilgrimage to Joel Shalaton's farm, Polyface Farms in Virginia. I wanted to understand what made him so special. He's an amazing guy. And I even had an opportunity to do some lobbying in Washington, D.C. with him many years ago. But it's just, people don't appreciate the work and the effort it takes to produce a really nutrient-dense product, whether it's a plant or an animal. And it's a labor of love. And there's centuries-old wisdom to it, but people don't realize that exists and that it's that important.
So would you say there's a mineral deficiency? I'm generalizing here, but is there a mineral deficiency in the soil that we need to substitute with or supplement with? Is that the basis of your work and the foundation?
Yeah, very, very much so. There are a variety of different sources, but suffice it to say that there's been tremendous erosion of minerals in the soil over the last century. And one of the more striking statistics that I came across comparing North America to Australia is that there was a allergy treatment program that you may be aware of. It's called HW Australia. And that was, they've got 5 centers across the continent of Australia. But the individual who started that program knew she wanted to come to Australia to field test the equipment to see if it would really help people clear it, because she knew that there was 3 times the number of food and airborne allergies in Australia than North America, because Australia has 1/3 the minerals that we have here in the United States. So there is a global erosion. I mean, the funny thing, as I think about the Earth, I would think, well, Australia's on the bottom of the planet. Why aren't all the minerals just falling down to your continent? But they don't seem to work that way. And there's a wonderful source of minerals over in Perth, Aussie Minerals, and they have a very sophisticated farming operation off the coast of the continent to renew. They've got minerals, 92 minerals in that product, which is just amazing. So it's a phenomenal source for Aussies to be aware of.
So let's talk about why we need these minerals and how it functions in our body.
It's a very simple process. We have about 9,000 enzymes that run our body, and they all work just like the cars we drive. So, Pete, when was the last time you drove a car without a key? It's pretty hard to do that unless you're Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
And so there's 9,000 enzymes, and you know, it's reasonable to think that, well, there must be 9,000 minerals to run those. And in fact, they're not. There's only a half a dozen or so. And the real significant issue is for people to be aware that these half a dozen or so minerals that activate these 9,000 enzymes are easily lost to stress. And I think what your documentary did was document one source of stress in the world and the impact that it has. I mean, it's very graphic to see those children with autism, to see what happened over successive generations of food stress, not to even get into some of the other dynamics that would be contributing to that. But the body does respond to stress. And the first mineral that leaves the body because of stress is magnesium. It's just the way we're wired. And the significance is that about 42% of those 9,000 enzymes depend on magnesium to activate them. So when you're under a lot of stress, you're losing basically your arm and your leg in terms of magnitude of body. The other thing is that when the stress becomes chronic, it affects the liver. And then the liver starts to produce a protein called metallothionein. And that protein binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. And suddenly you've lost magnesium and copper, which are the two most important minerals to make energy in the body. And that's where a vast majority of people find themselves today, is that they are stressed out for a variety of reasons, job issues, relationship issues, they've been in car accidents, they travel for a living, whatever, and maybe all of the above, and they're not aware that they're losing minerals in a New York minute, and they don't know, unless they've watched your documentary, how important real food is, because the average person thinks that the four food groups are boxed, frozen, round, and car window. Those are the four food groups. And that, sadly, that's the majority of the population on this planet. Certainly in this country, I don't think it's as much a factor in Australia. And I think Europe, it's giving way to this processed food, but there are certainly tremendous pockets of natural food throughout Europe and I think throughout Asia as well.
And we're also seeing with processed foods, they're adding in vitamins and minerals as well, which I know you're going to say is probably the worst thing that could possibly happen.
It really is. I mean, the thing, what people need to understand, one of the most important events that took place at the start of the Second World War, under the guise of that conflict, was they started to add iron filings to the wheat flour. Now, they started in England and Canada and the United States, and there's some speculation that it also happened in Australia, but the proof is not as definitive. But the fact of the matter is now, 75 years later, pretty much all over the world, they're adding iron filings. You know, my wife went to visit her son, who's also a chef. He was doing some work at a resort in India. And as my wife was landing two years ago, the paper was heralding the fact that the Indian government had just approved iron fortification of rice.
Wow.
And she burst into tears because she realized, oh my gosh, this is, and again, people, their understanding of the need for iron is completely programmed, and there's a lot of propaganda around this. And as you probably know, I mean, I'm a pretty strident individual about the importance of really only three minerals. I mean, I really focus on magnesium, bioavailable copper, and iron. And by managing those three, I can bring a lot of people back into balance. And what I think is important for people to realize is that in a paleo diet, if you're eating food as you were profiling in your documentary, they're going to get exposure to those minerals, which is so important. And what most people don't realize is that the focus in a paleo diet is on increasing the amount of fat. And that's really important to absorb copper because it's a fat-soluble mineral. But the other side of it is that most people don't know is that in the processed food world, there is this iron. We know that. That's a fact. And they add a lot of sugar, especially high fructose corn syrup. And the tragedy is that form of sugar has a known property to chelate copper in a bad way. And it also chelates iron, so it increases its absorption in your body. And so suddenly people are getting a very imbalanced ratio of copper to iron, and it creates a lot of destructive imbalance in their body. The other thing that's being done is they have taken, in the process of refining food, what have they done? They've taken most of the nutrients out of it, and then they add them back in synthetic form. And that's a recipe for disaster. Because there's a huge difference between retinol that you get from free-range eggs or grass-fed butter versus retinyl palmitate, which was made in a test tube, and your body doesn't know what to do with it. Because it's a storage form of vitamin A, and you got to have the right enzymes and minerals to make it work. So there's a tremendous amount of confusion that's taken place in the modern food industry that people are completely unaware of. And I think what your documentary did was it began to pull the curtain back, and just enough so that people could see the big picture and start to connect some important dots. But there's another layer of information and dot connecting that needs to take place so that people realize that they can take control of their health by managing these minerals, these vitamins, and these nutrient-dense foods.
So I know what you're going to say here, talking about having a multivitamin or multivitamin and mineral supplement that most people have, that they go to the chemist and that they get something off the shelf and down the hatch it goes. What is wrong with that? And I guess with the iron fortification of the rice or the cereals or the flours and so on, what is so wrong with that? Because for the layman, don't these tablets or supplements have what we need?
Great questions, Pete. Let's start with the multivitamin first, and then we'll get into the more dark topics of the iron fortification. And again, we have to be careful. We're making broad statements about, you know, all classes of vitamins. And there's, as you well know, there's a spectrum. You know, yeah, not all restaurants are the same. You know, there's a wide stratification. But for the most part, multivitamins are not designed with our best interest at heart. One of the most important ratios in the body is the ratio of calcium to magnesium. And there needs to be two parts magnesium to one part calcium in our diet, at least that much. I mean, technically, we evolved from the sea. And the sea has three parts magnesium for every amount of calcium. And in the average processed diet, it's now five parts calcium to one part magnesium. And what the multivitamins do is just reinforce that. They all will have at least two parts calcium to one part magnesium, the exact opposite of what you need. What they're also going to have is a lot of zinc and not enough copper. Usually it's going to be 15 milligrams of zinc and maybe 1 or 2 milligrams of copper. Then they're also going to start to provide anywhere from 18 to 25 milligrams of iron. Well, the average earthling on this planet needs 25 milligrams of iron. That's true. But we have a recycling system that's supposed to provide that. There's a constant recycling of iron throughout our body. And that recycling program is supposed to deliver 24 milligrams a day. And it will do that as long as copper is bioavailable in the diet. And what's happened is the food industry and the supplement industry has taken it upon themselves to assume that people can't recycle their iron, so we'll do it for you. And we're being drowned with iron. And so these multivitamins have way too much iron in them. Then we start to get into some of the vitamins. the vitamin A that they're going to use, it's either going to be beta carotene, which is a plant form. It's the precursor to retinol. But the important thing for people to understand is that it takes 12 units of beta carotene to equal 1 unit of retinol that you get from an animal. That's a big difference. And the other choice that these supplement companies will use is the synthetic retinyl palmitate. And again, it's a synthetic that is not easily digested and not easily turned back into retinol in a stressed out body. The B vitamins, for the most part, come from coal tar derivatives. I don't know whether you've ever researched coal tar derivatives. Unfortunately, I have. And there's 10,000 elements in coal tar derivatives. What I find wildly entertaining is they have names for 5,000 of them, but they claim that there's another 5,000 they haven't identified. Well, one of the things that's very prominent in coal is something called iron. So there's an iron bias to all these B vitamins. That's not a good thing. Then we get to ascorbic acid. It says it on the label, it says vitamin C. So we assume it's the whole complex, but it's not. It's ascorbic acid. And this is a conflict that's been raging on this planet since Albert Svengorgi got the Nobel Prize in 1937. And a year and a half before he got that Nobel Prize, he wrote a letter to Nature Journal, which is considered one of the most prestigious journals on the planet. And he said, flat out, in a letter to the editor, ascorbic acid does not cure scurvy. And he had identified something called hyaluronic acid that did. And long story short, they chose to ignore that letter, even though it was published, still give him the Nobel Prize, but all of the pharmaceutical industries chose to make ascorbic acid and ignore the whole food vitamin complex. Why is that significant? Because when you take the vitamin C complex out of a fruit or other food that might have it, what you're going to find at the core, the outer shell, is in fact ascorbic acid. But when you start to break it apart and get down to the inner core of it, there's a really critical enzyme called tyrosinase. And tyrosinase is a three-sided pyramid that has copper at all four points, one at the top and three at the base. And that copper is absolutely essential to help us to make the copper-dependent enzymes that run our body. And so the one that I haven't talked about, which is my favorite, of course, is vitamin D. And the world is absolutely lost in vitamin D. It's a pseudo condition. You know, you have low vitamin D that completely ignores the fact that the process to make vitamin D requires magnesium. There's three critical steps that require magnesium: the transport, the creation of the storage form, and the creation of the active form. And that's completely ignored. And when people have what's deemed low vitamin D, then they're given this supplement that is a fat-soluble form. And in fact, the form that we need is what you can get by standing outside for 10 minutes in Australia, which is the sun-derived form, and it's water-soluble. So the sunlight completely changes the structure of the vitamin D because it sulfates it, which is not possible with the supplements. So for a wide variety of reasons, that one a day, that multivitamin that people think is an insurance policy, is actually a death certificate because it's really confusing the heck out of the body. Now, as it relates to this iron thingy, the dilemma is that the two greatest nutrient deficiencies on this planet, according to the World Health Organization and other bodies of that caliber, claim that there's the two nutrient deficiencies are iron and vitamin A. So let's break that down. We live on a planet that has the number one element on this planet is iron. 36% of the Earth's composition is iron. And so if the human species on the outside of the planet is, quote, anemic, it must be because it can't metabolize that iron. And what's important for the listeners to understand is iron does not regulate itself, that it's actually regulated by copper and copper-dependent enzymes. And the fascinating part about it is in the average adult body, it's about 5,000 milligrams of iron, and there's 90 milligrams of copper. So there's a ratio of 60 to 1, 60 parts of iron to one part of copper. And they are, in fact, a ventriloquist act, and iron is the dummy, and copper is pulling the strings on every level in the body. And that apparently is not taught in any practitioner training school that I know of, because whether you're talking to an allopathic physician, a naturopathic physician, a chiropractic physician, osteopathic, whatever, they all think that iron exists in isolation, independent, and if it shows up low in the blood, well, then the person's anemic. And the other thing that the listeners really need to really understand is there really are three pockets of iron in the body. There's a cluster of iron in our bone marrow, especially the long bones of the leg and the arms, and that's where new blood gets made. There's a pocket of iron in our blood, you know, red blood cells, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then there's a pocket of iron that's in our tissue, all over our body, especially in our liver. And a reasonable thought would be, well, then iron must present evenly across those three pockets. But it doesn't. And iron in the blood versus iron in the tissue can be off by a factor of 10. So that there can be 10 times more iron in the tissue than actually shows up in the blood. And this creates a lot of confusion in the doctor's office because people present with what appears to be anemia. And so the doctor does what any reasonable doctor would do, which is, let me give you an iron supplement. One of my course records is an Australian whose doctor had her on an iron supplement for 2 years, Pete, mm-hmm. taking 250 milligrams a day for 2 years. The body needs 1 milligram a day coming from the outside. This woman was a hot mess. And there are millions and millions and millions of other people just like that. And this is a global crisis of misunderstanding. And the beauty of the paleo diet is it is, in fact, introducing that fat that is so important to begin to absorb the copper. But if people don't know where the copper-rich sources are in their diet, they're not going to be able to regulate that iron. And that's where the real disconnect is, unfortunately.
It's so many questions I want to ask you now, but I want to get into the nitty-gritty or the solutions here for people. So you talked about a paleo diet being one of the optimal ways of doing this naturally. But if there isn't enough minerals in the soil and we are deficient, what are the steps that you recommend for people that are listening to this that want to understand how their bodies work? So do you recommend blood tests, hair analysis, urine samples? Take us through the protocol and then also a supplementation of what's out there that you recommend.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to share that. My real focus is, as I got into this work, I wanted to be the thinking person's nutritionist. I don't know where that thought came from, but I wanted to educate people about how the body really works. And that's been my stock and trade, and I've gone to great lengths to do the research and be able to share it with people, because there is a lot of mythology out there, as you well know. And I'm sure that the same mm-hmm. is true in the world of cuisine. There's a wide range of talent. The thing is, people have been raised to believe in disease. We've grown up in families. We have friends, colleagues, what have you, and everyone's got a label. And so we have been raised to believe that the disease, in fact, exists, when in fact it doesn't. there is no disease. I'll grant you there's metabolic dysfunction, and it's caused by mineral dysregulation. And the fastest way to dysregulate a body's minerals is to take too much iron. And that's a fact. It's the greatest stress to the human body, is excess iron in the diet. And so what I sought to do was begin to focus on a very important enzyme in our body that's driven by copper, but it regulates iron. And that enzyme's name is called ferrooxidase. Ferro for iron. And oxidase is to change its valence so it's a friendlier form of iron that the body can work with.
If people are listening and they're thinking, oh, if there's too much iron, should we not be eating red meat, for instance, or liver or things like that? So I just want to clarify that.
Yeah. No, there's a, well, there, as you well know, there's a big difference between muscle meat and organ meat. And so there's a lot of iron in the muscle meat, and there's usually, if you get the right cuts, there's a lot of fat in there too. Although you got to fight the butchers on the lean meat. It's become one word now, lean meat. But the organ meats, in fact, have a lot of copper in them. A grass-fed cow will have a beef liver that has twice as much copper as it has iron. But yet we've been raised to think that it's just an iron organ. It's not. And that source of food, of nutrient-dense food, it's the richest source of not just the B vitamins, the richest source of retinol, richest source of choline, richest source of copper, bioavailable copper. It's an amazing food, as you probably know. So I think people need to be able to distinguish between them.
I've got a supplement range all of one at the moment, and it's grass-fed and grass-finished beef liver capsules. That's the extent of my supplement range that I've released into the world.
Well, yeah, and again, I've got 25 vegan clients taking the desiccated beef liver capsules. That's how desperate they are to feel better. And so they can do that. That's a bridge that they're willing to cross.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's go back to that, because I just wanted to clarify that you're not promoting a meat-free diet.
No. No, the thing is, it's important for people to understand that there is no disease, and how do we get there? Because in the mineral testing, the hair test and the blood tests that I rely on, and the folks that I train that are doing this around the world, know that under stress, there is a loss of minerals, and the minerals do get dysregulated, and they show up very clearly in the hair test and the blood test. But we ask a really important question when we're meeting with a client, and it's a question that apparently no one else ever thought to ask. When did your symptoms start? And Pete, 100% of the time, people can take you back to the car accident, the divorce, the doctoral dissertation, the whatever, when there was this flashpoint of stress in their life, and or family members died or whatever, and then they look at you and they say, wait a minute, that you're saying that I lost all those minerals because of that stress, and that because those minerals weren't there, then the enzymes didn't work, and then because the enzymes didn't work, that's when the symptoms appeared. I said, yeah, that's right. And they go, so there's no disease. I said, yeah, the Merck manual, it's just a story. It's not a scientific fact. And people need to understand that. So that's a key piece of this process, is for people to realize that these minerals do get lost to stress, and they do get restored to a nutrient-dense diet. And so what we came up with is what we call the root cause protocol. And the root cause of all this illness is this mineral dysregulation. And the very epicenter of all of that is the conflict between copper and iron. And when copper is not at adequate levels in the body, if it's not bioavailable, it will allow the iron to act out. And iron is like a four-year-old with a hammer. Would you ever leave your four-year-old at home with a hammer and then go next door to the neighbors and have a beer? No, you wouldn't. No one in their right mind would do that. So the thing is, iron does act out. It causes what's called oxidative stress. Well, that's just a very stuffy way of saying rust. And this rusting process that we recognize outside of our body, a rusty nail, a rusty pipe, is actually happening inside our body, but no one ever told us that. And so what you've got to do, the essence of the root cause protocol, is there's a series of stops and there's a series of starts. And so we have people to stop eating the processed food, stop taking multivitamins, stop taking calcium supplements, stop taking iron supplements, stop taking ascorbic acid, and so on. We have like 10 to 12 different stops. And what's amazing is that many people say that they feel better just by doing all the stops. But then the real focus of this approach is building this enzyme called ferrooxidase, which is a word that no one's ever heard before, including your doctor. And to me, it's very clear in the literature, it's the Mount Everest enzyme in the human body, which means it's the most important enzyme to regulate our health. And so the focus of the root cause protocol is really around three things. It's around minerals. It's around vitamin complexes as Mother Nature intended them. And it's around nutrient-dense food. And the two biggies are beef liver and cod liver oil. But it's not just anybody's cod liver oil. There's only certain ones that we really recommend. The one that I personally use comes from Norway, and it's made by Rosita's. And it's made the way our ancestors grew up. And many of us had ancestors who had cod liver oil every day, hated it, but they were much more vibrant than we are today. But the whole idea is to restore these minerals in our food, in our water, making sure that we have minerals in our water, making sure that we're not afraid to add sea salt to our food, you know, and be very generous in the use of condiments, and make sure that we're bringing back sources of vitamins that our body would actually recognize. So that if we need retinol, we're going to get it from cod liver oil and beef liver. If we need B vitamins, well, let's get it from bee pollen, and let's get it from rice bran, and let's get it from beef liver again. If we need whole food vitamin C, you know, there certainly are food forms of it, and then you can certainly use supplements, but we recommend a couple different supplements that are pretty dense with vitamin C, either innate response or pure radiant synergy. And the vitamin D, we don't worry about it because we're going to get it through the cod liver oil. We also recommend people bring vitamin E, a vitamin E complex, into their routine as well. And the reason for these antioxidant vitamins like A, N, C, and E is they have amazing properties to also regulate iron inside the body. That's their job. The word antioxidant is actually code for deal with iron. It is this incredibly reactive element in our body. You know, it's in our red blood cells, but those red blood cells are breaking down all the time. And what happens when a red blood cell bursts? You then release millions and millions of hemoglobin and heme. Well, that's a very reactive substance. So the body needs to have an ongoing supply of nutrition and nutrient-dense foods in order to neutralize that reaction inside the body.
I have a question for you, because over here in Australia, the paleo approach or the ancestral approach has been blasted by not only by the media, but generally the media is the mouthpiece for the Dietitians Association. And one of the big things they always say is about B vitamins, and where are you going to get your B vitamins from if you're eating a ancestral or paleo approach, because you don't have the grains and the fortified breads and so what. So I know you touched on B before, saying it's the derivatives of the coal and the tar. So Talk to us about B vitamins as a whole and how important are they and what are the best ways to have them in the diet if we choose to?
I think the B vitamins are a very critical part of our diet. I think they're very grossly misunderstood. And the reason why I say that is that turns out that bioavailable copper is very important for activating a class of chemicals in our body called biogenic amines. Like, what the heck is that? Well, these biogenic amines are what bring good things to life. And a major class of biogenic amines are the neurotransmitters that we depend on daily. Those are called biogenic amines. They're very powerful in their properties, and it's copper that enables them to work in our body. There's another class of biogenic amines called histamines, and I'm sure you're very familiar with those. But they're that to me is the ultimate stress hormone in the human body, are these histamines. And in fact, you need to have copper and magnesium and B6 to run the two enzymes that break down those histamines. That's a whole nother. We could spend a whole hour just talking about that, but that's another class of biogenic amines. There's a third class that most people don't realize what they are, that when they were first discovered at the turn of the century in the early 1900s, they were called vital amines. And then they morphed into the word we know today, vitamins. And there's about 20 different B vitamins, vital amines, and it turns out that copper is really important for activating them. And the reason why there's this relationship with copper, and this, for your listeners' sake, this is not a run to Google and look up copper-activated B vitamins. You're not going to find this. Is after reading thousands and thousands of articles and trying to synthesize what they're saying. But the important point is that these B vitamins play a very important role in helping to manage iron. The role that B9, folate, and B12, cobalamin, play in managing the creation of new blood is legendary. But those things have got to be methylated. And you can't methylate anything unless you have bioavailable copper. There's 200 enzymes that bring methyl groups to the party, and they're all dependent on copper. Not a lot of people know that. And so these B vitamins are very important. They play a critical role. And historically, the best sources have been ancient grains and these organ meats, especially beef liver. And I'm sure there are other sources, but those are the two most dominant. But what happened over the last 100 years is an absolute abomination, that the wheat of our ancestors that used to be waist high is now below our knee, and they've totally altered its structure, as you well know. And what are they doing? They're spraying it with glyphosate, because glyphosate or Roundup is a desiccant, which means it's going to dry out the wheat, so they can accelerate the harvesting process. Maybe they can get a second batch in the field. And so they're abusing the wheat. And then what are they doing? They're destroying it by adding iron filings. So people don't realize that all this is going on. And this contemporary belief in gluten sensitivity, I think, is more a reaction to the glyphosate and the iron more than it is to the gluten. But the thing is, that centuries-long, millennia-long source of nutrition called grains has been completely altered in the modern era. And I've done over 5,000 consults in the last decade. And Pete, I have a list with 11 people's names on it who got excited when I encouraged them that they should be eating beef liver. Everybody else, they were repulsed by the very thought. And I'm sure that in your restaurants, how many dishes do you have built around liver and heart and kidney and things like that?
Well, it's fascinating that you say that, because somebody asked me the other day, are you going to release an offal book? I said, probably, but I don't think it will sell. But if you look at my social media page, I'm sharing offal recipes or pictures of the food that I eat. I eat offal at least 2 to 3 times per week. Last night I had blood sausage, for instance, that had also pork liver in it. The day before I shared a great recipe of fish liver that I ate at a restaurant. But I definitely eat pate at least 2 to 3 times a week with my kids as well. But I've got beef liver in the freezer, and once a week I cook that up for myself. It's funny, people go, what's your indulgent food? And I say offal. And and for my kids, it's salmon roe or caviar.
Oh, wow. That's
my
wonderful.
Daughter's after dinner, and I was telling my friend this yesterday, I offer them some coconut ice cream as a treat. Yeah. And last week they're both like, have you got any ikara, which is the Japanese word for salmon roe? Like, ooh, you want that for dessert?
Isn't that funny?
Go, yeah, that's what we want to eat. And it's brilliant. So stay tuned for an offal cookbook. But in the meantime, we've got our supplements. But I'll send you a few recipes, Morley. We're just about out of time. And I know you're coming to Australia soon. So I'll put up the details of where people can find you and know more about your work. It's been a terrific podcast so far. And I'd love to finish off not only to thank you for this valuable information, and I will get you back onto the podcast to delve a little bit deeper, but I would love to ask you for yourself, what's one of your recipes for life that you think will resonate with our listeners? And I'm not talking about food here. I'm talking about what makes Morley tick and something you could add to the rich tapestry of this world that we live in.
Yeah, great question. No one's ever asked that, but I love the intention behind it. I think what's important for people to learn, and this is true for everybody, we go through life and there's all sorts of things that happen to us. And it's very easy for us to internalize that this is being done to me, or it's being done to you. And when in the course of a consult, what I really do is make sure that the individual that I'm working with comes to realize that this isn't being done to them. It's being done for them. And that these adversities that we have in life are really stepping stones to a higher consciousness. And that it's important to recognize that there's benefit in this strife. And it requires a certain degree of resolve. I get that. I've had my fair share of heartache and setbacks, as we all have. But I think one of the things that my mom was very insistent on was the importance of, you know, when you do get knocked down, get back up and keep walking. And I took that to heart, and I think it's something that I really put a lot of emphasis on for people to realize that these, especially these conditions, these labels that people are living with all over the planet, they are opportunities for growth. And the people that I work with realize that, and increasingly they recognize that this is just part of the evolution of the Earth's consciousness, if you will. But I think it's a really important dynamic for people to realize. And I guess the other that I would add to that is just, you know, recognize that the pendulum of life swings both ways, and that when you're at your darkest moments, know that there will be opportunity and largesse at some future point in your life, and just recognize that and not get lost in the negativity of it, in large part because it's so defeating. That attitude is very, very destructive, as you well know. So those would be some observations that I would share with the listeners.
Beautiful words, mate. I've loved this podcast, and I love your passion for helping people, and it's been a true honor to have you here. And I just want to say I love you, and I can't wait to meet you in person when you come back out here.
Well, the feelings are mutual.
Thank you so much for sharing your time today.
Absolutely, and appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation, and look forward to others that we might have down the road.
The information, views and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences and conclusions, Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.